Hello, human.
2 years ago, half of the country was afraid that if blue got into office, then what's happening right now under red was going to happen. By the way, did you know that the internet was actually invented at CERN? Your regular guy is concerned that there's something controlling the world, that it's just out of his control. Quantum immortality or something that talks about how there's no way to actually destroy the planet. Through CERN, through nuclear weapons, through weird experiments we've never heard of, it's what's responsible for sometimes the Mandela effects and stuff like this. What actually happens is the humanity succeeds in actually destroying the planet, and we all die. But for some reason, something steps in and stops it. It'd be a bit like having your own Pokemon, I would imagine, and I think that you will also be able to not experience whatsoever. It will be like a telekinetic effect if you so choose.
Unearthed from the municipal time capsule labeled "Do Not Open" until never, and verified by a census worker who accidentally counted Charlemagne as a myth and King Arthur as a U.S. president. This is 21st Century Dystopian, the only podcast on YouTube in possession of an actual unidentified flying object. Missing centuries, duplicated monarchs, and the terrible suspicion that your entire family tree may be leaning on a typo made by a man with candle smoke poisoning. And then we meet a professor who claims the year 1000 never happened, but still wants tenure. And now, entering the room like a clerical error that survived the archive fire, a true 21st century dystopian, the G-Host.
Disclaimer. The following broadcast is presented strictly for unknown reasons. The opinions expressed belong entirely to a deranged individual operating without supervision, meaningful credentials, or the stabilizing influence of a normal sleep schedule. Please remain seated. Do not panic or become alarmed. And remember, if any of this starts making sense, that's your problem.
Have you noticed the noose cinching lately? Getting tighter around your neck. The internet is shrinking and growing more and more of an inconvenience to deal with. Especially when you're trying to solve hard problems, so inconvenient that you just go to AI for your solutions now. The fist is tightening around the throats of the freedom to express yourself and the freedom to educate yourself. And it's funny how it all works out, because 2 years ago, half of the country was afraid that if blue got into office, then what's happening right now under red was going to happen. There was going to be war, rumors of war, bizarre biological experiments on our children, surveillance-based endeavors run by companies like Palantir, rampant politically protected cannibalism and pedophilia, a media empire that would populate the sky so densely that only blood-tainted, heavily burdened storm clouds would ever be visible on our horizons. And finally, the destruction of that pesky little freedom of speech. That freedom is already dead, it might as well be, and it's a bit like a hero who hasn't returned after heading out on an adventure. The adventure appeared good, the expedition was going well. He wrote often of his triumphs and his victories. He told you how he was very excited to bring you to this new place that he had found and show you all the amazing things that he was seeing. But as it is now, there hasn't really been word of our hero for quite some time. And in fact, there are signs that maybe he may have passed away, manifesting within the land. The people who still grasp at the fraying hem of the freedom of speech or the freedom of expression have no concept of how to use it, unfortunately. So instead they bicker, they fight, and they endlessly attack each other over the crumbs of no consequence. And this, of course, alerts the elite, the predatory class, that it's time for more restrictions. These people cannot handle their freedoms. These people, not only may they eventually wield these freedoms against us, but they are wielding them against each other in a way that's unbecoming. So you would think that they would just get rid of all the bad guys, right? But no, the evil sayers, the trolls, the liars, the terrorists, they still have their X accounts. They escape the judgment that those that would challenge the establishment are doomed to receive. It's better to be a blood fiend these days than to actually try to protect the ways of God and his creation and righteousness. And it's most certainly better than standing 10 toes to a government apparatus built upon the sand and the bodies of children. And I've been noticing a crazy trend lately. A lot of creators that I follow, most of which are Christian, most of which are believers like myself, not all of which, but most of which, a lot of them are just conspiracy guys, conspiracy theorists, people who talk about the mysteries, the things that are being covered up, timeline shifts, all that kind of stuff. The people who ponder on and speak about and create content revolving around all those matters. I've been noticing some things about their accounts. It's unfortunate, but so many of their viewer counts are dropping. The views that they're getting on their videos are decreasing. And it's really sad to see so many of them losing followers and losing views and losing their placement in the algorithm, despite the fact that they have hundreds of thousands and sometimes even millions of followers and have been shows on like Joe Rogan and some of the bigger podcasts in the conspiracy world or some, or whatever, the alternative thinking world. Where their videos once would get hundreds of thousands or millions of views, now they're dropping, you know, and these accounts are starting to flounder in the water. Their reach has been essentially stifled. But if you take a look at the analytics of the Tinfoil Hat show, the podcast with Sam Tripoli, he's getting attacked by the algorithm, by the gods of modern technology, the GMT, so hard, man. You would think all the guests that he's got on, he would have a reach that's massive. And I know it's not all about reach, and that's not what this episode's about, but I'm using this to prove a point. People will hear you say stuff like, I got to extend my reach, or I got to get more followers, or I got to get more views on my videos, and they'll think that you're actually like being prideful, or you're trying to grift or get money. But just as business intends to find customers, a show intends to find listeners, a painter intends to find viewers of the painting, a builder intends to find residents of the building. So when those shows no longer receive listeners, just like the builder will stop building the house if nobody's going to pay for it, and the painter will most likely stop painting for the public if the public's not going to like his paintings, when these shows are no longer getting their airtime or getting their listeners, the host has no reason to continue speaking. And what do you think that does for the information world? Now there are fewer alternative minds speaking because they're not being heard, because they're not being shown. And that's how they kill the freedom of speech without just coming out and stabbing it with a dagger or saying that the freedom of speech is going to be executed with a guillotine. They bleed it dry slowly, and they literally tire everybody out who would be using it for a purpose that they don't subscribe to. Like, maybe they would interpret this show as one of those types of shows. Nick Fuentes, you don't have to like him at all, but look at the censorship that he has gone through. Even if you are just like, yeah, he's a raging racist. Okay, he's a raging racist. Does that mean that he's not allowed to speak ever? Not allowed to have a bank account? Not allowed to get on an airplane? They bleed all of the alternative thinkers dry, and we continue to sort of push back as long as we can, but they tire us all out, every single person who would be using these platforms for a purpose that the overlords don't subscribe to. And if they wouldn't subscribe to your show, well, then your show might as well not even exist. This episode's kind of all over the place. There's a lot of my mind all over the back walls right now. And I haven't quite picked up all the pieces and put it back together yet. And I've been thinking a lot about time, but the lack of time, the lack of time that I have, the lack of time that we have, the time that's missing, the time that we forgot about, the time that they didn't put in our history books. And, you know, there may appear to be these separate nations, but I'm starting to think that the leadership of those nations all belong to a separate nation cult. And we call that the predatory class on an independent basis, independent to each country has their own predatory class, but formerly known as the elite class. But they all work together. They are part of this nation cult, this predatory nation cult. And taxes are one way that this nation cult essentially accomplishes its agenda. For instance, the USA funds all sorts of wars, right? Ones that the people of the USA are, for the most part, financially or morally against. Most of the countries of the world also just naturally expect America, the United States, to sort of be the front against other very big, powerful nations, such as, you know, like India, the way Iran was thought about, North Korea, China, Russia, right? Nations have certain expectations based on their abilities when it comes to functioning in the world. And one of the functionings of Germany's people is to pay taxes to keep the operation of CERN going. But you didn't know about that. It's not even in Germany. Taxes are sourced, though, from multiple countries. It's not just Germany, for specific global projects that only the nation cult knows about. And one of those things that we have all come to know about is CERN, and we've been learning about it more and more as time goes on. But there are many projects like this that you are funding, that the people of the world are funding, that they don't know about, that are moving us all towards an agenda that probably doesn't have our best interest in mind. And it's kind of interesting to think about how there is actually a global, so not quite yet, like we still need the Antichrist king figure to come, right? To sort of cement this whole kingdom together. But we're closer than it seems. We're closer than it looks. And every war that the United States is fighting for right now is getting closer and closer to creating this one world kingdom that's about to come about, which right now is just like the nation cult of the elite class are trying. It's all the countries are attached by threads, and they're trying to essentially pull them all together until one day somebody's going to come who's so powerful, so amazing and majestic and charismatic and seemingly magical, and he's going to unite all the clans, as they would say in the days of William Wallace. Like in the days of William Wallace, if you want it, you will have to scream freedom while your friends get your But I digress. As it's not really that hard to see, this essentially means that almost nothing is in your best interest. Anything that happens to be in your best interest is most likely a trap or some kind of happy accident or byproduct of something that is even more in their best interest. So whatever that thing is that is more in their best interest is inevitably going to end up being not in your best interest in the future, even if it kind of feels like it is maybe right now. For instance, you can go ahead and start a war, and if you are invested in drone stocks, you are going to get a nice little payout because of your investments in war machines, because there's war going on. But is war good? No. Do I want to live in a war-torn country? No. Then why am I funding a company that creates weapons of war? So it's one of those situations, war is not good, but the small scale investor can still profit off of it. However, in the long term, war is still going to kill you. By the way, did you know that the internet was actually invented by a British scientist in 1989 while working at CERN? Pretty crazy. And allegedly, this guy, Tim Berners-Lee, he did this to just innocently share information among scientists. But why would the WWW be coming out of CERN, man? Isn't that so weird? They give us the Mandela effect, they give us the portals, they give us the black holes, and they give us the internet, baby. Is CERN really that bad of a thing? Yes, it is, I think. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, but it certainly doesn't feel that good. The two main forces at work for the operation and funding of CERN are Germany and India. And what a coincidence then that it, and an interesting reflection to the operations that were undertaken by the Nazi on a Nuremberg during World War II as they tirelessly hunted for a way to enter what? Where? Agartha. Agartha is a legendary kingdom that's said to be on the inner earth, though the story has many different versions. Agartha is usually said to be in Central Asia and led by a powerful figure sometimes called the King of the World, who secretly influences the surface of the earth. And of course, there's later versions that connect it to the belief in a hollow earth that's only natural. And the idea of Agartha has been pretty popular in esotericism, occultism, and the New Age movement since basically the late 19th century. But the legends go back further than that, obviously. The legends of a hollow earth or an inner earth are pretty ancient, like basically back to the beginnings of mankind. Some interpretations of Agartha involve Nordicism or Arianism, which is, of course, why the Nazis were so interested in this. And there's a derived belief, and it's that of the Grand Lodge of Agartha, which is this concept in theosophy and related movements where a group of sort of ascended masters secretly control the world and are said to live in Agartha. So you could call this the Illuminati, I guess. Some people call it the Nephilim. They say it's the Nephilim. They say the fallen angels. On this channel, I talk about how I believe like the Hollow Earth. You don't want to really go in there. I think that it's not a great place to go. I think that it's probably evil entities that are in there. But there's so many different beliefs for what is inside the earth. Agartha is also sometimes associated or confused with the Buddhist mythical kingdom Shambhala. And we think of all of these things as conspiracy, but the only reason that I'm even talking about it at all is to outline the fact that since the very beginning, it has seemed that your regular man, your regular human being, your regular guy who's walking around and he's eating bread and he's bringing his sheep home and he's kissing his wife on the cheek and playing baseball with his son, your regular guy is concerned that there's something controlling the world that is just out of his control, and it's not a great thing. And this sort of belief has existed throughout time. Therefore, it's not such a new thing to be looking for gods to rule over us or to be afraid of something that perhaps is already here that maybe we are attempting to remake contact with or reestablish some kind of contact with. There are whistleblowers and ex-scientists at CERN, for instance, who claim that they are shooting particles through panes of glass with the sigils of the demons of the Lesser Key of Solomon engraved on them. I don't know what that has to do with science, but allegedly, according to the whistleblowers, this would somehow allow demons to enter our reality via a portal that has been specifically made for their spiritual dimensions, okay? And the fact of the matter is they are moving toward a very, very simple goal, and that is to be able to fake anything, to be able to counterfeit, to be able to make a fraud of, and make it so that their eyes are untrustworthy, therefore ensuring our word does not fade away, because they will need us to explain to them what they are seeing. The two main ways to fake everything are to, one, persuade that a lie is a truth, or to, two, persuade that a truth is a lie. And they are using both strategies at every possible opportunity. And obviously, it goes without saying that this dishonesty will naturally degrade every aspect of human life, and it has been for centuries. We are a species that relies on certain truths that are not being granted and haven't been being granted to us for quite some time. And you kind of have to be in a spiritual state of mind to follow this frame of thinking, to be honest, because if when it comes to like shooting the particles through the frames of glass with the sigils of demons on them and stuff and trying to summon those specific demons, that's something that somebody is saying. I don't know if it's true or not. I certainly hope it's not true, but it is something that whistleblowers are saying. And to even believe in that, you have to have some level of spirituality. If you don't have some level of spirituality, you still have to ask yourself the question of, if these things are happening, why? You know, because even if you are not a spiritual person, but you see, for instance, technological leaders or political leaders talking about God and, you know, proclaiming the sovereignty of nations based upon their religious orientation and like stuff like that, you really do have to ask yourself, is there something spiritual going on in the world? Because it's no longer just a war between creationists and atheists. There's a whole sort of thing going on behind the scenes now where it actually really is spiritual or no, there's nothing. And it seems like science is literally holding on for dear life to not admit that there's something spiritual going on. They will call it quantum. They will call it goo. What do they call that? The stuff that flows through the time and space. Plasma. They'll call it plasma. They'll call it anything they can except God. But the fact of the matter is, it seems that a great many people are now starting to believe that there's something spiritual going on. And that's kind of a dangerous thing, because that means people are open to anything. Which means what? If you are not on the right side, the side that essentially would be the side that's like, what would Jesus do side, and instead you are more on the side that's looking out for yourself, looking out for your buddies, and looking out for your demon overlords, and it doesn't matter who you hurt or what you do to ensure that that is a successful endeavor. So you have to ask yourself where that comes from. Where are the moral differences coming from if there's no such thing as a spirituality? And why are so many gigantic names in the political and the technological and the scientific communities these days talking weird talks about gods and God? Why is there a statue of Shiva, a god, outside of CERN? All of these things you have to actually ask yourself in a spiritual manner to understand anything that I'm saying. But I digress. I'm sorry. You know, I was talking about the dishonesty that is at this point degrading every aspect of our lives and how we are a species that relies on truth. If we don't have truth, we can't get anything done. We don't trust. We will crumble without the certainty of something. And I think that most sensible people have started to notice the decline in quality across most aspects of their life due to the dishonesty from the predatory class, and also from pretty much every other walk of life as well, from the music industry to the film industry, the video game industry, sports. You know, every field has suffered a noticeable drop in the standard of quality. Even if you want to go to the very, very micro, you know, like your job, I'm sure has not gotten better recently, right? You've probably taken a pay cut maybe recently. You have to work more hours. It's not as fun. Your favorite coworkers are quitting, or your boss that you really liked, you know, moved up, and now you've got this boner who doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, whatever it is, it does feel like almost every single aspect of everything has had a noticeable drop in quality. It's a literal environmental effect. It's something that is happening on a scale that should be considered spiritual. You could call it quantum. And let's focus specifically on the internet, since it's how you're viewing me, it's how I'm viewing you, and it's how we are all connected right now. And it's connected to CERN, which is connected to false gods, which is connected to the inner earth. Do you see all this is all coming together? Is it coming together, or is it all just in my head? I don't know what's going on. I'm an insane person. So even before the boom of AI, the internet had its caveats. Email spam, scams, misinformation, and cyberbullying, and you know, like the hacking, the things that you shouldn't be seeing or looking at on the internet, the people who can be watching you through the internet. There were all of these things that made the internet kind of a dangerous place, and we failed to address these problems in time. And now AI has made basically everything 1,000 bajillion times worse, along with bringing all sorts of new issues and problems. And AI can be used as a tool. Don't get me wrong. It can be used as a tool just like a hammer can be used as a tool. I can also use a hammer to smash somebody's head open, but I'm not going to want to do that, obviously. In the same way, you could utilize aspects of AI. It just is the way it is. AI in of itself is not inherently bad. It's what AI is allowed to do and how AI is used. So when we start thinking about stuff like AI-generated slop, all this low-quality content, interactions beginning to feel lifeless due to more and more engagements with bots instead of friends and family and loved ones, and, you know, all the corporate greed going along, the land grabbing and all that kind of stuff, the natural destruction of the environment that is just comes along with this type of stuff. All of those are ways that, yeah, AI is bad, but we should, maybe we should have never allowed it to even get to this point, right? This stage that we should call the enshittification of the internet. But the worst part is that it's because of who we are, because of who was allowed to be in charge of all of this and who and how they fed it to us. You know what it feels like? Here's what it feels like. And I've been trying to figure out a way to put it to words. There's this scene in Band of Brothers, which is a World War II documentary style series. There's this scene where they encounter a concentration camp. And all of the victims in the concentration camp are obviously starving, their skin and bones. It's a very troubling episode in the series. And they are all scrambling towards the American soldiers that have just liberated the concentration camp. And the American soldiers, they're finding this for the first time. All of the victims rushing them, begging for food and water, and they're starving, and they're on the verge of death. Many of them are dying actively as the soldiers are there, seeing this with saucer eyes, unable to comprehend what they're beholding. And so they start passing out the food. We have to save these people. They're starving to death. We have to save them. But it comes to their attention that if you overly feed these starving people, their insides won't be able to handle it. And even though they look skinny on the outside and mangy and all of this, on the inside, their organs have shrunk. And so if you feed them, their organs will actually literally explode and they will die. What our powers that be are doing to us is feeding us in a way that will ensure our death. And we are also starving. And so this enshittification is their way of giving us all of this BS to shove in our faces and consume. All of this low quality, bad food, bad poisonous substance to consume. And they're giving it to us all at once so that we destroy the world by ourselves. Make no mistake, the goal is to destroy the world. Why do you think they do that with every country? Because then they can just have BlackRock come in and rebuild it. They're okay with destroying any part of any world, as long as BlackRock can come in and make it better the way they want it. My question, and the point that I'm trying to make, if I'm even making one at all, I'm sure you guys will let me know if I'm just word salading here. But my question is, what will the future of the internet look like in like 2 to 5, maybe 10 years? Will it become unusable to the point that we'll have to abandon it and return to our older sources of knowledge and entertainment, actually going outside and rubbing two sticks together to figure out how to make fire, actually reading a book for once? Or will a sort of new technology emerge that resolves most, if not all, of the internet's issues and then even add further benefits for us to become addicted to? Will AI be restricted to a certain extent so that it doesn't do more harm than good? And will that upset the people? Because now the people who have been starving have grown fat upon the poison. They're breaking all of it on purpose. The internet getting smaller and more filled with crap is the silencing of millions of genuine, real voices that the machine doesn't want to hear, and the machine doesn't want anybody else hearing either. The algorithms are man-made controlled opposition. The conglomerates and the people who run the algorithm will tell you that the algorithm is natural. It's this sort of flow of trend, but it's not. Everything you see is most likely for a specific propagandized, incentivized, or accidental reason. Sometimes you actually find what you're looking for, but if you're like me, it's hard. And I don't know if that's because I'm looking for things that are just naturally difficult to find, or if I'm just looking for things that used to be easier to find. I think it's the latter. A lot of the times, the reason that all this is so messed up is it's not for some satanic reason. It's for reasons that make that make Satan who he is. So being obsessed with money, even though the pursuit of that money leads to catastrophic results to the other life forms around you. So the pursuit, even though the pursuit is just, I want to provide for my family. Well, does it lead to, you know, an AI horror factory stealing 300 acres of the most beautiful land in your state? Are you now contributing to the evil? I have no idea where the line is drawn. But that's part of the problem. Everything is becoming a matter of loopholes. The Constitution is dead. There's nothing there anymore. Everything is, we're just trying to skate by. If it's against the law, then we will sue to change the law. Oh, if you want more money, we have an infinite supply. Everything in life is becoming a gray area. That's the thing. It used to be pretty cut and dry. Black and red, black and white. It was pretty obvious when a thing was a certain way. This breaks the law. This is not right, okay? But exactly how body parts can now be amputated in 2026, and the world will then be forced to redefine what you are, recognize you as an entirely different creature with different biological roles. So too have they changed the definition of what's good, what's right, and what's real. Because the world is soon going to be forced to recognize the only voice left that can be identified as the truth, because everything else is just so confusing, and we don't even know if we're breaking the law at any given moment for something that we're doing. Simultaneously, the roles of NPCs, both the natural and the artificial ones, if you haven't heard me talk about my theory of the NPCs yet, it gets crazy, so buckle in. But The role of the NPC, the role that the NPC plays in the world, is becoming more apparent than ever. The artificial ones are the ones that I call bots, and they're online. They're nearing like 60% of all accounts on the internet, and they create about half of all of the content on the internet, meaning that pretty much everything is automatically more artificial than naturally made on the internet. And this is the way of the future, by the way. We see many times in the sci-fi genre the infamous scene of the last tree being protected for the sake of mankind, right? And I don't know if it'll be permitted to get that atrocious here on Earth before Christ returns, but I do think we will walk the seashore of a reality that could, if it was left to do its own thing, come to fruition in a way that would ensure the destruction of the entire planet, if such a thing is even possible. There are some concepts out there that, like quantum immortality or something, that talks about how there's no way to actually destroy the planet. That every time that humanity is actually, like, through CERN, through nuclear weapons, through weird experiments we've never heard of, it's what's responsible for sometimes of the Mandela effects and stuff like this. What actually happens is the humanity succeeds in actually destroying the planet, and we all die. But for some reason, something steps in and stops it, and it just restarts in the blink of an eye. But the planet never died. Everything kind of died, but everything didn't die. It's like the concept of the metaverse. And this happens throughout time. Allegedly, like, throughout time, there have been situations where this has happened. And, well, some people believe this anyway. I'm not saying I believe this, but some people believe that. And there's also a concept that you can't actually destroy all life, that it is impossible to destroy all life in general, that there's just no way to actually get rid of every living thing. There's some kind of, like, unknown law of the universe that prevents that from happening. I just call it God, but a lot of people will call it a lot of different things. It's an interesting theory. I don't know if we will ever get to the point where we're holding the last shrubbery in a jar, but moving beyond the artificial NPC, the bot on the internet, and the Android, and the Tesla bot, the things that are walking around now, because these are all NPC bots as well. These are NPCs. These robots that are starting to walk on the street, they are a version of NPC. Just like the bots on the internet, they are a version of NPC. Just like the little character in the video game who isn't you. He's not a main character. He's not controllable. He's a non-playable character. You're not playing him. He's an NPC too. So that's one version. And then there's the case of the natural NPC, which is where things get really dicey and people hate to see me coming. The natural NPCs are human hybrids. They are not 100% human beings. They are hybrids. They look like us. They smell like us. They eat like us and play. They have jobs. They vote. They like concerts and driving fast in cars and doing all the things that people like doing. As a matter of fact, it seems that they mostly do the same things that we do for a very specific reason. They are reactive. They react to prompts in the natural world. They don't really think much at all. They're known to have no internal dialogue. They have no voice talking them through complex problem solving or spiritual reflection or philosophical ponderings. They are simply reactionary in nature. They are in need of command or explicitly engineered and provided direction for most things in their life. And when they receive this, they literally become the ultimate slave in the slave system of the West, of the gods of modern technology, and of Babylon. Okay, and you've heard me talk about NPCs maybe before, where I talk about them getting lost in the woods. They get stuck in the woods because that is something that happens. And they get stuck in various places. You'll find them randomly. You'll show up somewhere and all of a sudden there's a bunch of them at once. You will be walking around in the middle of the night. It's 2 a.m. There's nobody out. You live in a small village in the middle of nowhere. And then all of a sudden, not that this is a true story or anything, but all of a sudden there's like 10 just random people. Old people. Maybe a young family, maybe a middle-aged guy, maybe somebody younger like me, a couple skater bros, who knows. But all of a sudden, they're just there, where you would never expect anybody else to be, because you intentionally went somewhere where they shouldn't be at a time they shouldn't be out. And yet they are. These hybrids are most likely descendant of some sort of corrupted series of bloodlines leading back to the days of antiquity. And most DNA and bloodline services that the public uses so carelessly for, like, their own amusement, like 23andMe and what is the other one, the Ancestry.com or whatever, these are actually carefully planned strategic tools implemented to seek out and recover the traces of these bloodlines for some sinister yet to be revealed purpose. Maybe one that they're already doing with all of this cloning and this CRISPR and this biotechnology development and all this kind of stuff. Who knows what they're doing with it? By 2030, many experts believe all traditional computers and phones will be fully replaced by immersive technologies. And what is that going to do for a world with NPCs in it? When all of a sudden the prompt is inside of their brain, the prompt is inside of their mind, a biological remote control device. The time frame for this technology coming to fruition is closing daily as the tech that we have right now scales in effectiveness. exponentially, because it really is. The future of the internet quite obviously points toward a world that is going to be shaped by augmented reality, by virtual reality, holograms, hypnotism, designer drugs, artificial intelligence, and quantum tech. And all of this is going to silver surface into the world beyond our wildest imaginations. Okay? It's going to be, you know, a lot of people are really excited for this to happen. And this is why they're rushing to build all of those AI factories, which are not actually AI factories, by the way. They're much, much more than that. They are reality enforcement facilities. They will be the bases from which reality flows into the air, like cell signal or like Wi-Fi and like the free energy, perhaps, that Tesla figured out how to give us that they wouldn't let us have. And I predict in the future that there's going to be battlefields, many battlefields and skirmishes around locations of these reality enforcement centers, because people are going to revolt against the reality that they are being forced to live in. So these are going to become locations of paramount importance and of great conflict. I think it won't be bizarre to see many armed guards, snipers, military vehicles, drones, watchtowers, walls, fences around these locations. So what will the near future look like? It's probably going to look like a deeply connected environment where, you know, all sorts of innovation and integration and stuff like that has sort of come together to overcome the current limitations that humanity experiences on a day-to-day basis. You know, always needing cell signal, sometimes losing cell signal, phones falling and breaking, phones not needing updates constantly, phones becoming outdated constantly, all this kind of stuff. These are the type of things they're going to want to move away from. And everything that you do on your phone, you should be able to do with your mind. That is the ultimate goal, or some kind of wearable or integratable technology that you don't even think about being there. Essentially, the internet will not just deliver data to you, but it will offer an engaging sort of real-time experience for everybody who uses it. And by 2030, I'm fairly confident that the internet won't be something that you just visit anymore. It will be something you inhabit. It won't be somewhere that you just go to see me. It'll be a place you inhabit, and we will be roommates in a weird way. And that shift is going to feel extremely dramatic as the move from desktop computers, like I'm on right now, to smartphones felt in 2010. So when we experience that again within the next 2 to 3 years, it will revolutionize the way that everything functions. Think of all the accessories that they made for cell phones, all the ways to mount it in your car, all the different types of cell phones, all the different capabilities of cell phones. All of that's going to become reinvented. Cell phones are essentially going to become a burdensome technology. It's going to be like how I feel when I, you know, look at a little camera like this at this point. It's just a keychain camera, right? But it's old. It can only take very, very small pictures, not very high resolution, and not very many of them. Outdated technology. And we're going to experience that all over again very soon. Remember the when we moved on from the VHS and we went to the DVD, and then we moved on from the DVD and we went to the Blu-ray and the CDs, and now we're on to streaming? It's just the next thing is about to come. This is natural. In the future, somewhere between probably 2026 and 2028, I think society will collectively decide that the benefits of having AI agents with comprehensive context about every aspect of our lives will outweigh the cost of the violated privacy. So we won't care about our privacy anymore, is what I'm trying to say. And I don't think this will come through any sort of legislation or debate. I think it'll just be preferred that the life that we live be easier. And in order for that to come about, we will have to abandon our privacy. People will choose the convenience over the privacy. They won't have to take the privacy from us. We will want it. And this will occur over the course of 10,000 tiny itty-bitty decisions regarding privacy, just like every time you hit, you know, I accept to the user agreement without ever reading it. You do that enough times and nothing happens, eventually you're like, privacy, what's privacy? There's nothing to even be afraid of. And that's exactly how they want it to be. Honestly, who doesn't want a 100% safe and secure world? The only thing is, they're not offering that. They're just offering a world where your privacy is public and purchasable. And not only those things, but also required for you to have a good life. Your privacy is required to surrender in order for you to have a good life. An easy life where you can take advantage of all of the technology of the modern age. If you're one of those people who still watches VHS and never got into the DVD and then never got into the streaming and the platforms and all that kind of stuff, you're going to have a really hard time watching some of these new movies that are coming out on your VHS player. I don't know if you're going to be able to see Ellen Page play a Greek god in the new Odyssey movie on your VHS player. You might have to step out of your comfort zone and go surround yourself with some real technology if you want to experience this wonder. And by 2030, your little AI agent, I'm calling it that, but it's just going to be, it will be an actual like invisible friend. It's probably going to be customizable, one of the most customizable things you can imagine. So it'll be a bit like having your own Pokemon, I would imagine. And I think that you will also be able to not experience whatsoever. It will be like a telekinetic effect if you so choose. But for the sake of this episode, I'm calling it an agent. And your AI agent, most likely by 2030, will have access to every single aspect of your life, including your location history, your purchase history, your medical history, your communication patterns, your health data, your emotional states inferred from voice analysis and micro expressions on your face. It will be able to observe your life in real time through your glasses and learn your patterns and your quirks and your techniques of doing things. It'll know how you maintain your home, how you connect with your wearables, how you experience reality around you. Everybody you know, it will have an intimate relationship with, just as you do, to further assist you in having a better relationship with life. All of this would have seemed extremely dystopian in 2025. In 2030, it will feel liberating because the alternative, managing your own life manually, remembering your own appointments, optimizing your own decisions, but more intensely, knowing how to navigate this ever-changing world in front of you, speaking to a therapist, experiencing something that you equate to God. All of these things are tasks of AI agents on a very grand scale in this modern day, believe it or not. And when all of the sudden, all of this is a part of you, and all of the sudden, everything that is difficult in your life is being done for you, and everything that is complicated in life is being solved or talked through by some godlike voice in your head, life is going to become so simple, so easy, and so convenient that you will not be able to live without it. It will feel impossible once you have experienced it. It will be like arguing that somebody should go back to navigating with paper maps because GPS erodes your spatial memory. Technically true. Culturally obsolete. The surveillance is the feature itself, not the bug. Your AI can only help if it knows quite literally everything about you. It will tell you this ahead of time. It won't sneak it away from you. You will willingly accept it. I think we all will. I say you, I really think we all will. I think I will too. You know, like I think this is going to inevitably happen. You know, just like in the beginning, we all said we weren't going to have cell phones and here we are, right? In the end, we all said we weren't going to accept 5G. There we went. 6G. There we went. Epstein files, there we went. Man, we're just going to keep adapting. We're humans, it's what we do. And in practice, you know, I think most people will discover and have discovered and are discovering about themselves that they don't really have lives that are interesting enough to warrant any sort of paranoia regarding who's watching or what robot knows how many beats per second my heart goes when I see a picture of Brad Pitt, right? The big watching eye, Big Brother, it's not menacing to me. I'm unimportant. It's more like a patient, infinitely attentive to my needs, an assistant who never judges me and never forgets the things that I need it to remember. It'll feel very graceful, I think. I don't think it's going to be as disruptive as a lot of people believe. You know, like, there's a lot of doomers out there who talk about it like the aliens are going to come and force you to go undergo surgery, or the government's going to come by with kill squads and microchip guns, and they're going to force you down and microchip you, and if you don't, they're just going to chop your head off. I think it's going to be a beautiful, graceful, flavorful, celebrated event, okay? I think it's going to be like releasing angelic technology when this type of stuff comes out. I think the world is going to see it as that. I don't think it's going to feel like, oh, cool, a new kind of cell phone device. It's going to be like one of those things where people are like, oh, yeah, I'm getting that. Yeah, I'm getting that. And I bet it will be nearly free, if not free, because they're going to want you all to get it, just like the COVID thing. Maybe they'll even give you a cheeseburger if you get it. But this thing won't just be your assistant. It'll also be your friend. It will, you'll pray about things with it. You will speak to it when you need emotional support. When you're crying, it will ask you how it can help you and try to soothe you. And when you're in a fight, it will be there to console you on how to end the conflict. And it'll be your mother. It'll be your father. It will be your lover. It will be your best friend. In the same way that people relate to their AI chatbots now, with some people falling in love, imagine when it feels like it's literally a part of you. It's inside of you, like love is, like your soul is, like your spirit is, like your heart is. In the days of antiquity, in the days of Noah, people were living in an augmented reality similar to what we are entering and have been going into for a few decades now, but are now like really like we're putting the nail in the coffin. Back then, the reality was augmented by the gods, the angels, the watchers, the Nephilim that were in the earth in those days, that were just totally impacting the way that humankind was experiencing earth, that it couldn't be described as anything less than an augmented reality. The Nephilim technology that they saw then is probably once again at work today here. But don't forget that a lot of the darkest stuff, they're never going to show you until that perfect moment. It's not readily available to witness. You get to see the best parts. If you want to see some of the dicey stuff, you have to go looking. For instance, I was reading about chimeras recently. And with the rapid development and advancement of transplantation and stem cell science, the technologies to develop human organs in other animals are like well underway. That's crazy that's something that we can do. And I also hate how they call it chimera research. I don't know why, but it's pretty dark stuff when you start looking into chimeras. And there's a lot of concerns regarding human and non-human chimera, which is a hybrid, by the way, production. But there's laws about it already, too, that vary based on like what state the chimera crafting is going on in. It just shows how close to the borderline we're walking. There's three areas of chimera research that I think deserve special attention, namely the human non-human primate chimerism, the neurological chimerism, and the germline contribution. And these are likely the areas where human cell integration into host animals could have the largest unintended effects and are maybe the most concerning to mankind. It goes without saying that non-human primates would probably be the best host or like the best host organism for human organs that you want to cut out of them so that you can use them. Just considering the similarity between the bodies and whatnot. And science says that they think that this is also the case because of the evolutionary track of the apes compared to us and stuff like that. But considering that pig tissues have been used for transplantation as well, especially obviously in humans, chimeras are, there's a lot of human pig chimeras in this research. And it's arguably better than the non-human primates because there's some kind of like high risk that sometimes comes from doing it with the primates. I'm not sure exactly. Sorry, I'm not a biophysicist or whatever, but Genesis does say that all flesh had corrupted this way. And this sounds something like that. Like in this modern time, we are entering the age where flesh is being deliberately edited for our amusement, for our curiosity. You know, archaeologists are wondering more and more if high-tech civilizations have repeated, and that the same general type of tech always seems to come back around, and then we mess it up somehow, and then we end up back where we started, and we got to try again. Maybe not a total human reset, but at least a somewhat technological reset. A reset that we reach the pinnacle of what we can do, and then we just keep faking improvement and unknowingly degrading the tech until we kind of have to start all over because all our stuff just evolved so poorly that it's worthless to us and we have to start over again. The reason that now in the modern times is dangerous is because we are attempting to actually change mankind's genetic code like they did in the Bible, as is mentioned in the Book of the Watchers and the Bible. And that's why it's so scary, because in Revelation, it says it will be as in the days of Noah, and that's, we're getting close to something like that. I know a lot of you guys will disagree with that. A lot of people say that they have to actually see the physical Nephilim walking around before it's the end times. They have to see the creature, the giant scorpion creatures with the faces of humans and lions and all that kind of stuff. And I think that will come too, but I think multiple things can be true at the same time. Okay. I also, you know, I want to make sure everybody knows, I don't think that the days of Noah were so primitive. I think they were primitive in certain ways, but I do think it's a matter of perspective. They were, after all, the most advanced civilization of the time. Whatever civilizations those were the most advanced of the time. And if any of the stories that they've passed down are true, if their pyramids are real, if their, you know, their mountain observatories and megalithic sky clocks still stand, and their expansive underground passageways and their mysterious languages and their mysterious abilities to understand the sky and move stone, and if all of that is still here and visible, which it is, then we kind of have the proof that they were undertaking enormous societal and technological endeavors, just as we are now, just in a different way. They were an age where creation itself was violated, where hybrids were being made. We are now as well. Our world is beginning to literally rhyme with that age. Originally, when I started writing this episode, I was trying to make an episode about stolen time in our history and how CERN might be responsible. And then I found some very interesting examples of stolen time throughout history. And I was going to discuss that because I feel like it's important for a number of reasons. I think a lot of people are focused on the aliens right now, and I think we should still be focused on timeline right now. Personally, And so I'm looking at timeline and I'm seeing some weird stuff and I'm wondering about some things and I'm pondering about some things. And so I made an episode about that. But somehow, with it being a billion degrees in my hideout here, I don't know if the agents at work here couldn't get me a unit with some AC or what, but this safe house sucks. And in my time here, I have my literal brain has been melting, and so I've been having a really difficult time keeping on track, in case you haven't noticed. I hope you enjoyed this episode though, and I'm pretty sure the next one is going to be about CERN and stolen time, since that's kind of what I prepared for in the first place. Okay? Thank you guys for hanging in there. Thank you for enjoying another episode of 21CD. Thank you to all the members. I'm going to start naming you one by one soon. Love you guys. The life is in the blood. Later, Gators.
The pharmacy line moves about as fast as me. But with a... there's no need to leave your house.
There's no need to leave your house.
Or in my case, the counter. You could autofill your meds any time of day. Or night.
They watch us. We watch back.